Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, I'm excited today. We're beginning a brand new series. It's called What If? And it's a simple concept, really. It's kind of what I do every single week as a preacher and as a communicator of this church. We are always asking ourselves to dream about what if, you know, what if things could be better? What if, you know, God is actually right when he says things to us? What if it's true? And what if that actually mattered to us? It's really the concept of what we're trying to wrestle with here. God has a plan, and we want to discover the power of that. What if God is right? And what if the fact that God is right can change our life? And see, what if is a really powerful question. You probably asked what if this week. I've asked it this week. We look back in the past, maybe in regret, what if I had done things differently? You look forward to the future, you know, what if things didn't have to be the way they are? It's a very common question. As I was kind of getting ready for this series, it occurred to me that pretty much every advancement in human history came from what if, because somebody looked around at the status quo and said, what if we're wrong? What if things could be better? You know, for example, what if our planet isn't the center of the solar system? What if we're not the center of the universe? What if? What if our world isn't flat? There are some NBA players that still think it is. They're wrong. I've seen the pictures. I don't understand. What if the world is flat? What if we could come together as 13 colonies and could get freedom from that island across the Atlantic that controlled us? What if people, simply by being born, had rights and we should fight to defend those rights? What if we could put our phone in our pocket? Yeah, they're not all great. What if we could stalk people from the past via the internet through something called Facebook? What if? And if you laughed, it's because you did it. You do that. You're stalkers. Stop stalking people. Stop it. The people from high school have moved on. Stop comparing your life to theirs to see if it's better, right? Just stop. Trust me. Just stop doing it. But no, this question, this what if question, it's a very common question. And in fact, you know, what I do as the leader of this church and as the communicator who comes out here and preaches all the time, I am constantly asking you to imagine what if. And it's like I said at the beginning, what if God is right? You know, because, again, I believe he is right. That's why I do what I do. But we don't typically learn that way for somebody just saying, you're wrong, God's right. So we always do series that are a journey. They're always a what-if journey. Hey, what if by giving God total control over how you spend your time, God could make your time better? And so we spent a month talking about time and what God has to say about time. And because I've talked to many of you and I've heard the stories, I know that you discovered God was right about time. And you gave him control over your time, and you're trying to follow his principles when it comes to time, and it's making your life better. In the past, we've done series on relationships and marriage, and it's basically a question of what if God is right about your marriage? What if God is right when it comes to how to love your spouse? And for those of you who have said, you know what, maybe God is right, and you've tried it, you've discovered he is right. You've discovered that it is better. Everything I try to do is to take you on a journey of asking the question, what if? What if God is right, and what if it would make my life better? And the reason you keep coming back is because God is who he says he is, and God does what he says he will do. And every area of your life you give him access to, you give him control over, you keep doing that because you discover that it's better. Your marriage gets better. Your relationships get better. Your parenting gets better. Your kids get better. Your teenagers get better. You guys are awesome. I don't know why they're laughing. I mean, you're the best. You've discovered this in all these different areas. In fact, we just finished a series on blessings that was all about all the better that God gives us, all the better that God provides, that he gives us everything we need, and his presence is there, and it's so great, and it's so much better. And here's what we learned last week, if you were here as we ended the last series. We learned that all the better we get from God, all the blessings we get from God, all the things we get from God don't stop with us. They're not supposed to stop with us, that we are blessed to bless. What if God's right about that? What if God really means that everything he gives you, he expects you to use to help other people? What if he really means that he has a specific plan for your life, not just in your marriage, not just with your parenting, not just at work, not just in your neighborhoods, not just in the way you interact with your parents, not just in all those other ways? What if God actually wants total control of your life? And what if that would make your life better? That's really the point of this entire series, is just to get you to imagine what if. That's the point of today. I'm not even going to encourage you to change any behaviors today. Today is all about just getting you to imagine, what if God is right in this one area that you are so desperately hoping I don't bring up? You are so hoping that I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say, and I'm going to say it. The real question in this series is very simple. What if God is right? Remember, the same God is right about your marriage, right about your parenting, right about your neighbor, right about forgiveness, right about all those other things. What if that same God that's right about everything else, what if he's right when it comes to money? What if he's right? And I've been doing this long enough to know. I know when I say the M word during a sermon, when I say money, everything changes. I see it. I feel it. I see husbands look at their wives like, I told you I was going to talk about money today. I see him getting mad, like, man, how can we get out of here? How do we leave without it being awkward? So again, look, yes, we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about money today. We're going to talk about money next week. We're going to talk about money the next week. For the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about money. But remember what I said, I'm not asking you to change anything today. I'm not asking you to give anything. We've already passed the baskets. We've already clapped. There's no giving involved. I'm simply inviting you to imagine, what if the same God who is changing every other area of your life where you are choosing to invite him in, what if that same God is right when it comes to your money? Here's what I believe you would find. I believe you would find your life would get better. Specifically, when it comes to your finances, it would get better. And not only would it get better, I believe your church would get better. I believe your church would be stronger. And so we're going to do something a little different today, something I've never done before, but as I was really thinking about how to begin this and how to really kind of help us all understand what we're talking about, I decided to kind of share something with you that I've never really shared before. We don't talk about it a whole lot, you know. Many of you say we really like the fact that we just get to come to church. We don't have to do the business side of it, and we respect that, and that's kind of how we handle things. But we started kind of asking ourselves as a church, like, what if our church did decide that God was right about money? Like, what if? What would happen if we decided that, yeah, he's right about this, we should give him control over this? And so we did a little research on our giving, and what we found was kind of interesting, and I just want to share it with you very quickly. And again, I'm not sharing this for any reason other than for you to know. I'm well aware that when I'm on this stage and I talk about money, your trust meter goes way down. Like, when I give you God's advice about your marriage, you're like, I'll do it. God's advice about your parenting, I'll do it. God's advice about forgiveness, I'll do it. God's advice about money, well, now you're just being a greedy pastor who just wants my money. I don't know why you have to do that. Why are you a liar? Why are you lying on that stage? You're a liar. You're a liar. Lies. Like, it's an interesting little dance that happens. Like, I kind of believe a liar is a liar. So if I'm lying about money, why am I not lying about your marriage? I've never really figured that out. But if I'm telling the truth about your marriage, which I am, because I'm preaching from the same book, quoting all the same people, what if I'm telling the truth about money? What if God really does have a plan for your money? What if it would make your life better? That's really what I'm trying to get you to think about today. But before we jump in, there again, some interesting stuff I discovered about our church I kind of wanted to share with you really quickly. We started asking this question, you know, what if our church, what if we all decided God was right about money? And so we kind of looked at our giving for this year, and here's what we discovered. For 2017, we've had 568 different households make contributions to our church. Now, that's a lot. Yeah, you can clap for that. That's a lot of people. That's exciting. 568 households. That's not individuals, that's households, right? That's people who have made a contribution to our church. So then we started looking at those contributions, right? We started looking at how much they were, and we were asking the question, what if our church decided God is right about money? Well, if we decide God is right about money, as you heard Eric mention earlier, we believe in tithing, which would mean that if God is right about money, that means that the first 10% of what I make should go back to God. And again, we're going to talk about tithing next week. I'm not asking you to tithe today, but that's what we believe. And so we were like, okay, what if that were to happen? And what if our people were to decide that God is right about money? That means they would all tithe. And so we kind of analyzed our giving. And we were like, well, how do we know if somebody is tithing? And the answer is we have no idea if somebody is tithing. Maybe you've heard that myth that you have to turn in your W-2 at churches. I've never known one where it was real. It's always a lie. Like, we have no idea if you're tithing or not. We have no concept. But so what we decided to do is we're like, okay, let's try to figure this out. Let's aim low. Let's aim conservative. Let's be as generous as we can. Let's try to figure it out. So we talked it out, and here's what we decided. We were like, well, the average household income in Myrtle Beach is like 40-something thousand a year when you do it all. And we're like, well, that might be a little high. And so, again, for math purposes and to make it really conservative and easy, we were like, okay, let's assume that the average household in our church, their income is about $36,000 a year. Let's just assume that, okay? So that would be $3,000 a month, and that would be super easy for us to figure out, because if you make $3,000, you should give $300. And so we were like, okay, what percentage of these 568 households who have given to our church this year have given $300 a month? You know, that we would say that's tithing. And here's what we discovered. We discovered of these households that 18% of them seem to be tithing, 18%, which means 18% of them are regularly giving $300 a month or more. And so, which means the vast majority of the people who give to our church are giving less than that. I'm not knocking the contribution, anything. This is just an illustration. And so then we ask the question, okay, because we have the data, we can figure it out. We assume everybody, you know, 36,000, you know, you may make way more than that. You may make a little less than that. But again, just the average. We're like, okay, let's say that's the average. So let's say the average household, you know, the average household gift is like about $50 a month. And so we were like, now, but what if everyone that gave decided to tithe? What if? What if all these households, you know, the 82% of people who are giving something to our church but aren't tithing to our church, what if they decided to tithe? And it was super easy math, because it was about 100 families that were giving, so it left about 468 families. We know we have some people who are from out of town or whatever. We took them out. So we were like, okay, there's probably about 400 families who attend our church regularly, and they're giving, about an average of $50 a month, right? That's about what they're giving, $50 a month. And again, that may be their tithe, and if it is, I'm not, but just on average, it's probably not. And so $50 is what they're average giving, $300 is what we were considering a tithe, so that's $250 a month. And so if you have 400 families that increase their giving $250 a month, what we discovered was that giving would increase in our church $100,000 per month. And we all just kind of passed out. Because that's more than we actually receive an offering most months. We were like, man, what if? You know, what if our church decided God was right about money? What if we all decided to do this? And we started dreaming. What if we had an additional $100,000 per month? We asked the question, what if we had it? What if we had an additional $100,000 per month? And, you know, the guys who run this room got real excited, you know, because they were thinking about all the lights. And I was like, no. Not about us. What could we do in Myrtle Beach? How could Myrtle Beach become a better place if we had an additional $100,000 a month? Here's a couple of things we discovered. Number one, we could fully fund a Habitat for Humanity house each month. You guys remember back in January when we partnered with these organizations, we built two houses, we're so excited. Well, we know how much those houses cost, and if we had the additional $100,000 per month, we could fully fund a Habitat house each month. That's 12 families a year that we could transform their lives by ourselves and move into a home. Not have to get community partners, anyone. We could do that, and we still have money left over. But we kept dreaming. We're like, man, what else could we do with this money? And we thought more about our community partners, and we realized we could relieve their fundraising pressure. All the community partners are always trying to raise money, street reach, fostering hope. And the New Directions is the umbrella organization for street reach. They're always trying to raise more money. We could go to them and say, hey, what do you need? You know, I know right now there are some projects at Street Reach that's still waiting to complete because they don't have the funding. We could go in and say, you know, on top of what we already do, let's do more. I would love to do that. We could do that immediately and tangibly make Myrtle Beach a better place. Now, there's one more that I want to share with you, and this is my personal favorite. It's the one that really moved me over the fence of talking about this with you publicly, because it's pretty scary to talk about this, because again, I become super untrustworthy when I talk about money, and I'm fully aware of that, so I'm trying to be as transparent and honest as I can be, because there's just a lot of, you know, in the Baptist world, we always say people get funny when you talk about money, and they do, and by funny, we mean mean, and so that's what funny means. They get really mad. And so this was the one that I was like, you know what, that's going to convince everybody. That's going to make everybody think this is a great deal. Because if we had an additional $100,000 a month, look what we could do. We could eliminate the need for school fundraisers. Come on. You know, we are partners with so many churches here, with so many other schools in Myrtle Beach. And man, my kids go to Myrtle Beach schools. And the fundraisers, guys, they suck the life out of me, man. Like... And I've talked to some people behind the scenes, and like they get like 50% of the money. Like they don't even get all the money. I cannot tell you how many times I have dreamed about going and sitting down with some of those principals we love, those principals we help all the time, and just say, just give me a number. Just tell me how much you need. Just tell me, and don't make me sell wrapping paper ever again. Just give Wellspring the number. We will cut you the check, and you don't have to tell anybody. Just we'll cut you the check. Guys, I would love to be able to do that with every church in Horry County, every church, every school in Horry County. That's just the tip of the iceberg of what God could do if we all simply decided, you know what, God's right when it comes to our money. And that's just externally. You know, you just saw the video about A Place to Call Home. We've got, you know, $200,000 left to finish it. You know what $100,000 plus $100,000 is? It's $200,000. November, December, we wouldn't even have to be talking about it. A Place to Call Home would not even been necessary years ago. I mean, you look around, we're not blind. We know that, you know, there's about 12,000 square feet over here that needs to be finished out eventually. And we'll probably have to do another type of A Place to Call Home. We won't call it that, but it'll be another type of fundraiser to raise the money for that. You know, people, we're not blind. People have asked us about, hey, you guys thought about adding some more bathrooms to the church? I'm like, yes, I've thought about it. Bathrooms aren't free. Unless you know the free bathroom fairy. I'm glad you laughed at that. They didn't laugh first time. I thought it was funny. I mean, you know, I'm just being honest with you. You know, there's staff we could add. There's so many things we could do. I get giddy. I'm not going to lie, I get giddy when I think about the potential of our church. If we all just simply decided God's right. And I'm not even talking about new people. I'm not talking about growth. I'm just talking about all of us that love Wellspring and call it home. I mean, what if? What if God's right about money? What if these are things he wants for our church and wants us to do? What if? Now, this is bigger than just making our church better and stronger. Now, make no mistake, I'm not hiding the fact. I am hoping to cast a compelling vision. I'm hoping to move you to obedience. And I'm hoping that because of it, God's able to do way more through our church, unequivocally. But I would almost say bigger than that and more important than that, what I'm really hoping to convince you of today is that the same God that's changing your life in all these other areas and setting you free and making life so much better wants to make your personal life better by adopting his plan for money. He does. It's just like every other area of our life and everything God's ever done for us. Every command is an invitation to position ourselves under him to receive everything he's ready and willing to give. And that is nowhere truer than with our money. Next week, we're going to talk about this a little more directly because we're going to quote Jesus. And here's what Jesus says, I'll tell you. Next week, he says this. He says, there is nothing that will compete with God in your life more than your money. And ultimately, you're going to have to make a choice. You're either going to follow God or you're either going to follow money, but you can't do both. And so today, what I really want you to do is to just begin to imagine what your life would be like. Just begin to picture it. Picture your church. Picture your family. Just imagine what would happen if you decided to say yes to this question. What if I gave God total control of my finances? What if I did that? We've already talked about the church. Now I want to talk about you. I want to talk about how much better your life would be if you said yes to this question. If you just decided, man, what if I did this? What if I trusted God in this area? And to help you understand why I think it's such a big deal, we're going to turn to a guy we turn to a lot here at Wellspring. His name is Paul. Paul wrote about half of the New Testament. Paul was a church pastor. He was a leader. He would go start churches, and he would then hand those churches over to other pastors, and he would go start another church. And Paul would write letters to those churches because they didn't have a Bible. They didn't really know how to be Christians. And so Paul was kind of teaching them how to be Christians. And what we believe is that God was speaking through Paul when Paul wrote those letters. And that Paul wasn't just writing those letters for them. He was writing those letters for us. And that he was writing the word of God. So we can read these letters almost 2,000 years later. And it's like God is speaking directly to us. And Paul had a protege. His name was Timothy. And Timothy started a church, and Paul coached Timothy on how to lead that church. And Timothy ran up against this issue. He ran up against the issue of people who were giving God control of so many other areas of their life, but when it came to money, they were refusing. They were saying, no, this is a little too important. We shouldn't even talk about this in church. This is my money. This isn't important. I want to keep this for myself. And Paul, knowing how serious it was, because he knew what Jesus had said, because he'd experienced himself, writes Timothy this letter. And in the 6th chapter of 1 Timothy, he directly addresses this issue. And he begins by proclaiming a truth about wealth and about God that you may know, but if you even know it, you don't like it, or you may think it's crazy. But Paul basically is like, man, I gotta jar you, I gotta get your attention, then I'm gonna explain why it's true. But what he's basically saying is, if you won't give God control of your money, what you're basically doing is you're trusting God rather than the money. And you're trusting God, and you're trusting the money for something that only God can do. So he begins his discussion in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. He begins it by making this really bold statement. Here's what he says. He says, true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. In other words, follow God. Be content with what God provides, and that makes you wealthy. That produces great wealth. Now, let's just be frank, folks. We live in Myrtle Beach. That is not how we define wealth. It's not how you define wealth. It's not how I define wealth. We define it by the car we drive. We define it by how close we live to the ocean. We define it by how big our house is. We define it by, ultimately, how secure we feel in life. Be honest. I don't think people want money just to say they can have more than other people. It's because we equate money with security. We equate money with peace. And what Paul is really trying to say is, hey, guys, that's wrong. Man, that is so wrong. Like, remember, you have a God that's eternal. You have a God that's been around forever and will be around forever. And he wants you to place your trust for peace and hope and contentment and satisfaction in him. So if you're placing it in anything else other than him, you're kind of missing out. And what Paul says is like, why would you even do that? It doesn't make sense. Here's what he says. He says, look, after all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world. And we can't take anything with us when we leave. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. He's saying, again, guys, this doesn't even make any sense. If you're a Christian, you have placed your faith in an eternal God. You believe he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You believe he is the source of hope and peace. His son died for you. So why on earth, when you have eternal hope and peace wrapped up in God, would you redirect that need for hope and peace off of something eternal and onto something as temporary as money? And you may say, well, how temporary is money? I don't know. Did you live in Myrtle Beach in 2007 and 8? Did anybody see that coming? Did we not learn at that moment how temporary and untrustworthy money is? The housing market collapsed. Did any of you do, who pushed the button? Who pushed the button to make it cut? Nobody. The stock market can collapse. Who pushed that button? That's what Paul's trying to say. He's like, look, even when you are brilliant with money, even when you are so careful, even when you know exactly what you're doing, why on earth would you want to place your eternal hope and security in something that is so out of your control? That somebody else can just come in and mess up. Jesus talks about it. That somebody else can come in and steal. That it can go away. He's like, guys, just think about it logically here. If your choice is between something that is going to be around forever and will never change, that's God, and something that can be gone tomorrow and is completely out of your control, that's money. And you have the option to feel the same way, even better actually, but placing your hope in Jesus, why on earth would you not take advantage of that? Why on earth would you allow yourself to go through the pain and the stress and the heartache of actually allowing this deal closing to affect the way you treat your family? The fact of whether or not I get a bonus at the end of the year is going to determine how happy my Christmas is. He's saying, look, if you have Jesus in your life, why on earth would you still allow these other things to affect you that way? It's like it doesn't even make any sense. There's better for you. But he's not done because he knows it's not a super convincing argument, because you can come back with some things. And he's like, okay. It doesn't make sense because it can go away, but that's not, probably not going to work. So let me go to the other side. Let me explain how dangerous it is. Let me just help them understand how dangerous it is if they keep placing their hope not in eternal God, but in completely temporary, fickle, can be gone tomorrow money. And here's what he says. He says, but people who long to be rich, and don't get thrown off by the rich, long to be rich just simply means you want more. And you believe more is going to make you satisfied and content. See, that's the problem with money. You guys ever thought about that? No matter how much money you have in the room, no matter how much, if I were to ask you, how much do you need to feel safe and secure? Universally, the answer would be more. I need more. And Paul's like, do you understand that? Like, how can you believe that's ever going to fully and finally satisfy when the answer is always more? And that's dangerous, because people who long to be rich, people who long that, people who chase more, people who genuinely believe, if I just close this deal, if I just get this, if I just get that, then I'll be satisfied. Then I'll be happy. He's saying that's dangerous, because people who long to do this fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. And again, we live in Myrtle Beach. We understand this. We all know people, we may be people, who live in houses we can't afford. We all know people, we may be people, who have credit card bills we can't pay off. You know why that's true? Because this is a promise. Because this is what Paul is saying will happen when you put your faith and trust in more. Have you ever heard the story of the multimillionaires that have to declare bankruptcy? The athletes who get paid like $20 million and 2 years later, it's all gone. And we all have the same question. We all look at each other and we pat ourselves on the back. We're like, man, if that was me, that would never happen. How do you waste all that money? How is that possible? It's possible. Because this isn't a suggestion. Because Paul's not telling us his idea. Paul is speaking on behalf of the God of the universe. And he's saying, those who long to be rich, those who place their hope in money, will fall into temptation and will be trapped. That's what Paul says, not me. That's what Paul says. And you say, why? Why is this such a big deal? And here's the answer. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. Now, I highlighted this because you're going to get hung up on love. I don't love money. We've been on a couple of dates, but it's not serious. I don't love. Then what other word, specifically, this is specifically for the Christians in the room. What other word would you use for something that you've decided is out of God's reach? That you've said, God, I'll give you my family. God, I'll give you my relationships. God, I'll give you my time. God, I'll give you all these other areas, but money, sorry, God, that's mine. I don't trust you with that. I don't think you can handle that. I think it's bigger than you. In fact, I don't really know why we're even talking about it. I don't think it's any of your concern. And God's response is, the fact that you feel that way is exactly why it's my concern. Because it's already my money. It is. Sorry, hate to tell you. I'm not really concerned with your money. I'm concerned with your heart. And your heart's going to follow your money. So that's why I want you to hand your money over to me. Give me control. Because I know I have your heart. So that's all God ever wants. He only ever wants to protect us. He only ever wants what's best for us. And he's seen it over and over and over again. He's seen the silly things we do in an effort to satisfy our love of money. In our effort to believe, if I just get more, if I just get enough, if I can just get this, if I can just get that, then. And it breaks his heart. Because he knows it won't work. It never has. And it never will. And so a few verses later, Paul gives us the solution. Here's what he says. He says, Timothy, he's talking. He says, you got to teach those who are rich in this world. Don't get hung up on rich. We're all rich. If you have enough money to know you want more of it because it'll make you secure and happy, you have money and you're rich. That's what he's saying. Teach those who are rich in this world, those who have enough to chase more, those who want to chase more, teach them not to be proud and not to trust in their money. You got to teach them, Timothy. That's what he's saying. You got to talk about it because this is so important. You've got to teach them not to trust in something temporary. Trust in something eternal. That's what he says. He says, don't trust in their money, which is so unreliable. You know it's unreliable. You've experienced the unreliability of it. It's why you're stressed out. It's why you fight with your spouse. It's why you snap at your kids. And Paul is saying, God has better for you. Stop trusting in money. Stop trusting in the gift and trust in the giver of the gift. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. It's so simple. He's saying, no, don't trust the temporary when you could trust the eternal, because it will make your life better. You will stop believing the myth that more is going to make you happy. You'll stop chasing it. You'll make smarter decisions. You'll make wiser decisions. And so what should we do with our money? Here's what he says. He says it's very simple. Tell them to use their money to do good. And that doesn't just mean give it all away. Do good for yourself. Do good for your family. We got a bunch of people at Wellspring who have fully given God total control of their lives, and they love their house and they love their boat. And it's totally fine. This is not a thing about saying you got to give it all away. That's not what he's saying. You got to give control away. You got to change your heart. What he's really saying is, by telling them to use their money to do good, what he's saying is, tell them to stop thinking of their money as the source of good. Stop thinking of their money as a treasure. Start thinking of their money as a tool to accomplish something better. A tool that God has given you, that God has put under your control to do good, to do better. And here's how he ends. He says, look, By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. Now, don't miss this. What he's saying is, as you begin to hand God control of your finances, it is a process. It's a building process. And you begin to lay a foundation in your life. You begin to lay a good foundation in your life. You begin to lay a sturdy foundation in your life because your hope is built on God, which is eternal, rather than money, which can be pulled out from under you tomorrow. He's saying, as you make this transition, you build a foundation so that you may experience true life, a foundation based on God, so that no matter what happens in your life, your foundation does not move. Your foundation does not shake. If you get a raise, your foundation doesn't shake. If you get a pay cut, your foundation doesn't shake. If you go in tomorrow and your boss says your job is over, your foundation does not shake because you have built it on something better. That's what Paul's saying. And he's saying specifically to people who have had their lives changed by Jesus, he's saying, you have experienced this in so many other areas of your life. Why in the world would you not try it in this specific area? What if your life would be better? That's the question. That's the question I want you to wrestle with today and this week. I want you to discuss this with your spouse, discuss it with your friends, discuss it in your community groups, discuss it with your children. Just imagine, what if I gave God total control of my finances? What if? I am not saying you have to do it. I'm just inviting you to spend the week imagining, what if? And as we said at the top, one thing is for certain. If you gave God total control of your finances, you would know this. My church would have more potential, 100%. And I say my church. We may not be your church. That's okay. Give to your church. But it's an unequivocal fact. If we gave God total control over our finances, our church would have more potential. And as the leader of this organization, I get excited about that potential. But here's what else I hope you'll discover this week as you really think about it and talk through it with your family. Not only would you discover my church would have more potential, I believe you'll discover my family would have more peace. My family would be more secure. Because if I give God total control over my finances, I am placing my faith, I am placing my trust, I am placing my security in something far more stable than the next deal. Far more stable than a raise at the end of this year. Far more stable. And 5 more business meetings, hoping, praying, they say yes. See, that's what God offers. Peace, despite your circumstances. So just imagine, what if, a deal breaking down at the office didn't lead to you yelling at your children when you got home? What if? What if a bad month didn't lead to a series of fights? What if a bad day at the market didn't ruin your weekend? What if? What if God is right? And what if he can provide hope, peace, and security for your life in a much bigger way than how much money is in your bank account? What if? That's what I want you to imagine this week. What if God's right about this? What if there is better available? And then next week, come back and we will talk about how to turn what if into what is. Let's pray. Father, we love you so much. We just thank you for your generosity to us. We thank you for what you provide to us. And we thank you that you fight for us. We thank you that you tell us things we don't want to hear. We thank you that you love us so much to tell us truth even when it's difficult. And Father, I pray as we close with this last song that you will just plant your truth in our hearts, and that this week we will have the conversations and we will begin to dream. We will begin to imagine, what if you are right about money? What if we gave you total control over this area? What would happen? Father, we know that your church would have more potential, but Lord, I pray that we really settle into the fact that our families would have more peace, because we would be building a solid foundation based on you and nothing else. As we sing, may our hearts begin to turn to surrender in every area of our life. It's in your Son's amazing and holy name we pray.
Thanks again for listening to the Wellspring Church podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, visit wellspringchurch.tv.